Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. On January 13th, 2022, I'm probably getting to say that right as opposed to last week when I kept saying 2002. Okay, it's January 13th, 2022. All right, here on Education Talk Radio, which, as you know, is the voice of equity and access and social-emotional learning through our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Everything we do is at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. We're starting a weekly newsletter over there. We have our bi-monthly magazine, Equity and Access, over there. We have a link to seltoday.org, our social-emotional learning website. And also, of course, we archive every podcast there. Again, ace-ed.org. We invite you to go over there, subscribe to the magazine. Everything's free, and we'll send you a link, et cetera. It's good stuff, and we really love doing it. Today, speaking of equity, speaking of diversity, we've got two wonderful female superintendents from across the country to talk about the need for more female superintendents and to disprove the myth that the girls can't become superintendents. That's not true. Of course they can. All right, and we got great ones here today, and one of them especially is a hero. I'm going to introduce her first before she falls back to sleep. That's Mary Templeton. Mary, are you there?
I am. Good morning. And no, I'm not falling back to sleep because I've already had two cups of coffee.
Man.
Yes.
I have to tell you, the reason I'm saying that, I'm in Maine, okay, so it's 9 o'clock here, okay?
6 a.m. over here.
Mary is sitting on the Columbia River in Washougal, Washington, which, by the way, look on Google Earth, it's a gorgeous place with a view of Mount Hood, right, Mary? You can see Mount Hood.
It's gorgeous, yes, that's correct.
I mean, what a place. I never heard of Washougal till I looked this morning.
Okay,
and it is just gorgeous. Right near Vancouver, Washington, not Vancouver, Canada.
Yep.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I got this on the Washington side of the Columbia River. We'll find out more, but Mary, it's 6 a.m., so thank you for getting up so early.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. And sleeping late this morning, we have Jessica Dane. Okay, Jess, are you there?
I am. Good morning. How are you? There was no sleeping late for me.
I know. I can only imagine, okay? She's the superintendent of Piper School District, and I'm going to start here in Kansas City, Kansas. I was just on I just did a show a couple of days ago with the Park Hill District right across the state line, okay, in Kansas City, Missouri. Okay? We'll start with you, Jess. Tell us about – we're going to talk about we need more female superintendents, and we really do. Okay, and I got a lot of reasons for that. But just tell us about Piper. Why is it called Piper School District if it's in Kansas City, Kansas? Why isn't it the Kansas City, Kansas School District? Help me.
Good morning. Well, there are multiple school districts in the Kansas City, Kansas, in the city. So there is Kansas City, Kansas, Missouri. There's Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas. And then there are several smaller school districts also in Kansas City. So we are one of those smaller ones that are in Wyandotte County, Western Wyandotte County, Piper School District, a little over 2,600 students.
Well, but you serve people whose address is Kansas City, Kansas, right? Some people.
Correct.
Whose address is.
Correct. Yes. So Piper is not a town or a city. Piper is only the name of the school district. Correct.
Why did they – now the next question. Why did they name it Piper School District? You know the answer. Why did they do that? Why?
I do not know the answer to that one.
But I may suggest that the place was once covered with rats, and a man came in with a flute and walked all the rats out of town. Okay, and he was the Pied Piper. That could be. Piper's you know, and I have to say, before we get back to Mary, I have to say, this is really interesting, because if you take a city and you break it up into smaller school districts, that might work better, because I went to school in Philadelphia, the whole Philly's gigantic, and that's one school district, and becomes, if I may, somewhat unmanageable. All right, it's interesting to take cities and break them into smaller schools. I like that idea. Okay, Piper School District, thank you. Okay, that's great. Mary, tell us about beautiful Washougal.
Well, first of all, yes, it is beautiful, and we are located on the Columbia River, very near Portland, Oregon, which is a very interesting dynamic. So we are beautiful. We're a little bit, about 15 miles from Portland, Oregon. So we have that lovely feel. We're like this little bubble of, isn't it lovely?
Yeah, you are.
Beautiful. Yeah, but then we're so close to that Portland metropolitan area. We're kind of part of that larger scene. So it's a very interesting dynamic. You've got that urban influence, yet you've got that suburban concept of maybe small town-ish. We're about 3,000 students, and we're named Washougal because our town is called Washougal. How about that, Larry?
There you go. Thank you. I figured that one. Okay. I'm still working on Piper. Okay, it's pretty good. The rats with the guy with the hat with the flute. I'm thinking of that.
Good. That's good.
I don't think we like that story. I know.
You don't have to actually put that on the website. Okay, just a thought. Okay, just a thought. But you can picture the guy with the hat and the leggings. You know that story. Okay, so at any rate, we got that. You know, and the Washougal's beautiful. So is Kansas City, and I will tell you about Kansas City, Kansas. This is how you measure the quality of life out there. Jessica, how long does it take you to get to Stroud's for chicken fried steak?
Oh, probably less. Probably everyone would drive 20 to 25 minutes no matter where you live, so not too bad.
I would drive further. And how about the Arthur Bryant's for ribs?
About the same.
There you go. So then it's a perfect place to live. That's all I have to say on the subject.
It is a perfect place to live. And, of course, home of the Chiefs. So there you go.
And that concludes today's interview. We really appreciate you being here. Yes. Have a really good day. Okay. No, they are. They are a good team. And by the way, I always loved Kansas City. I know Kansas City, Missouri better than Kansas City, Kansas, but I really loved going there when I used to travel a lot. Okay. When I lived in Chicago, and it was just a great town. So you live in a good place.
And you're welcome to visit us anytime.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And can I bring my pet rat? Oh, I'm worried now. I can't do that.
We need to stop talking about the rats.
I know we do. I'm sorry about that. Okay, let's move on, okay? Female superintendents. By the way, I got to thank my friend Jimmy Minicello over at AASA, the School Superintendents Association, for helping put together this show. We're a little short of female superintendents these days. With about one in every four superintendents is female, and not only is half our population 50% female, but the education profession is probably about 80% female. Okay, so there's a difference between those at the top and the rest of the population within education. All right, and so tell me, you guys, let's start with Jessica. Jess, okay, what prompted you to become a superintendent, all right? And how do you encourage others in your district to look at this, especially the women? And I think it's very important we do this.
Yeah, so I will say my own personal journey, I didn't set out to be a superintendent. It's just something that I think evolved and happened as I moved from a teacher. I was a teacher and a coach and then a building administrator at the elementary, middle, and high school level, then moved into district leadership and just found how much I really enjoyed the position and having the opportunity to make things better, change the trajectory of the lives of students and professional development for teachers. And so I had some mentors that encouraged me, and that is how I've ended up in this seat today. And so that's part of the answer to your second question is I believe we have to be mentors for those young women that we see, those leadership traits, even if they don't see them in themselves. And then once they are interested in that, when the bug hits them, continuing to think of them, give them opportunities, support them throughout their career, and give them an opportunity to shine. So just like a lot of other professions, I think recruiting people in which you see those skills and then supporting them and educating them and helping them along the way.
It is so important. And Mary, talk about your journey to the superintendency.
Yeah. Well, my journey is very similar to Jessica's, starting off as a teacher and then moving into building administration and then central office. I'm having that same wondering about impact. So if I have been successful as a classroom teacher, as a building leader, we did some school turnaround that was pretty successful in Washington State, could you take that to the next level? But I will say, too, that I would not be here if I had not been tapped. if somebody had not said, hey, have you ever thought about administration? So like Jessica, I agree that we have a responsibility as superintendents, women superintendents, to be looking aggressively, I would say, I'll use that word intentionally, to make sure that we're asking our pipeline. And you said it, that Larry, we have 80% of our teaching force or workforce, they're women. That's who lives and works in this world and supports our children for the future. Why are we not then having more women into the superintendency? And in the state of Washington, we are at 23% of our superintendencies. There's 295 in the state are women. So yes, we have work to do.
Yeah, you do. And why do you think, Mayor, stay with me, why do you think that is? Why are only 25% female? That's an interesting question. It's a big sociological question. Yeah.
It is, and I think there are some barriers to women moving into leadership in public education, and a lot of that, I'll talk about my own personal journey, has to do with raising families. And so as a mother, I'm making that commitment. We had three children, so that you're very busy and active being mom, and you're still trying to balance a professional career. And when you move into administration, and I'm sure you can appreciate, there's a lot of hours required, a lot of attention to this position. And so how do you balance that piece with your family? So I think that's one of the first barriers. But then I also think that it's about seeing yourself as you're a teacher. Do you see yourself in your building principal at the elementary level, as an example? Do you see yourself in your district office leadership and in your superintendent? And if you're not seeing yourself as a female strong leader, how then do you make that that connection that, yes, I can, and build that confidence?
Jess, you were going the whole way. Your thoughts, Jessica Dane?
So very similar to Mary, I also have three children, and I think that is one of the obstacles. And honestly, I think maybe the public has been socialized to think that mothers, once you have a family, the role is to be in the home and support and take care of that, where perhaps, you know, in the past it's been socialized that dads are the one in the way that they support the family is to provide the resources. And I think part of what we have to talk about and continue to share, you know, with young mothers and young teachers, as Mary talked about, that are very talented, is that, you know, there are ways and supports in which you can have both. So I think first, you know, breaking down those walls and looking for the positives, I will say that, you know, I feel like my children were very well adjusted. Education is important to them, and I have two daughters and a son, and part of my story is just I wanted my daughters to grow up and know that they could do anything they wanted to do, and it was important for me to be a role model for them and the other girls that I served. You know, I felt like all the children that I served, you know, during the day, there were times that I was in a maternal role for them. So my story is very, very similar to Mary's. I think that that can be one of the biggest obstacles.
Right, and it's so interesting how it all changes. And I want Jess, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to ask Mary. These are crazy times right now. Again, it's 2022, okay? We've got COVID, and we've got political battles, if I may, over masks, okay, that sort of thing. There's a lot of chaos, okay, in education right now. The parents are getting more involved, not only for educational reasons, but sometimes for political reasons. There's a lot of screaming and yelling at school board meetings and all that, all right? And this, to me, is a very important question. All right, and Jess, I want you to answer this. I honestly believe that in times of chaos, this may be stereotyping, and I'm sorry if I am, but this is the way I believe, women are very calming factors. They seem to be smarter in these times. I'm speaking from the heart here. Okay, I really mean that. Okay, they're good at this. Okay, and they're good. And Jess, the time is now. And talk about being a female superintendent now. And Mary, I'm going to ask you the same question in these nutsy times. And I think there's a need out there and a difference for that kind of influence, okay, in education. I honestly believe that. And maybe I'm stereotyping, but go ahead, Jess, talk to me.
All right. Well, you know, I would say that when we go back to Mary's point about 80% of the workforce are females, I think that it's a profession in which women can shine, those maternal skills. And I do think some of what you said, Mary, you know, I read a Harvard study from a few years ago that talked about some of the traits that just the females are can, you know, are stronger in, and some of those are those calming factors and staying neutral. I would share with you one of the things in all of this that I try to keep at the forefront is no matter where the chaos is and where people are sitting on that line with masking or their political views, what I believe we have as common ground are children and the education well-being of the children. And so I think continuing that is the message that we keep out in front, that we don't fall into who's right or who's wrong, but rather when the focus stays on the kids, the data that we need for the kids for their safety, their well-being, their education, their learning gaps, I think that is the way that we continue to move forward. And I think that, you know, women can do a super job with that. We know many times women are a little bit more communicative. We've all read the study about how many more words women may say, you know, during the duration of a day versus men. And so I think those skills of communication, the focus being on students, putting students first, I think it's an area in which women shine.
I agree wholeheartedly. Mary, your thoughts on my thoughts and Jess's?
Yeah. Well, I'm nodding over here as well. Let me just say, too, that I have worked and still work with exceptional male leaders. So we have some superstars in the field, so I don't want to minimize any of their efforts.
Of course.
But what I will say is that from my vantage point and also looking at research, I do see women nurturers. We're survivors. We're creative thinkers. We have a natural empathy and a relationship-building skill, and also we're mediators. Think about if you're a woman who's a mom, that's what you do. That's your side hustle, right? I mediate between my children. So, right, and that particular skill comes in darn handy right now because, we are under pressure.
Yeah.
And, you know, being part, I really appreciate AASA and their leadership. We're part
Me
of
too.
BeLearning 2025, right, and they're supporting this work. And what they're saying is that right now we need to be future-driven, no child marginalized, and focused on the whole child. So that's kind of the premise of the Learning 2025 demonstration school district project. And you think about what women can offer to that, creative thinkers. No child is marginalized, and we talk about the whole kid. Because as a mom, I'm going to speak from my vantage point, I wasn't just responsible for their physical well-being. I'm responsible for their emotional, their academic, their their abilities as it relates to the whole child. So I think that women are particularly poised to be very successful as we lean into what's next for public education.
Absolutely. And by the way, speaking of all those emotional needs, I do have to say I talk a lot with Shelley Berman. Do you know Shelley, both of you guys? Jess, Mary?
I don't know Shelley.
Is that Mary?
Yeah.
Both of you? Okay, answered.
We're in the same boat, yes.
One of the key retired superintendents that AASA depends on all the time is a gentleman named Shelley Berman. Okay, he used to be in Oregon, and then he went to Andover, Massachusetts, and now he's retired and back in Oregon. I just talked to him last week. He's the king of SEL. Okay, you talked about social emotional learning. It's very important. You through AASA, especially you, Mary, he's close to you now, and he lives out right in some town in Oregon, which you could probably see his house
look him
from
up.
Your.
Yes.
Yeah, Shelley Berman, and he's just a great guy. I just wanted to put that out there because he is an expert on SEL. Okay, and we work a lot with AASA on SEL, and that really is important these days. And I think we have to take advantage of women's advantages in this area. Okay, and moving forward, which brings me to this. We're having a lot of trouble with a teacher pipeline these days. Everybody's short of teachers, okay? Mm-hmm. And B, a administrative pipeline. And as we encourage young women, which we all should be doing, let me change that. As we encourage young people to get into education, which sometimes we forget to do, okay, at the career fair, we have everything but the education booth, all right? But we have to show young women that if they get into education, there is a path in leadership beyond just teaching. And when I say just teaching, I'm comparing that to administration. Teaching's very, very important. But I don't think a lot of them see a lot of role models or understand that there is a leadership capacity to what they're doing beyond the classroom. okay? And I think we have to encourage more, if we encourage more young women to get into education, we will have a greater pool of people to move into administration. What are your thoughts on my brilliant thought, Jessica?
Well, I think you're right on the money. I think part of, you know, your point is the million-dollar question right now is recruiting young people into a field that I think is the best field in the world and obviously, you know, changes the trajectory of lives. So
yeah.
I think a lot of those recruiting efforts, you know, to your point, but right now we're struggling just with getting young people to see that that career is fulfilling and one in which they want to pursue. So I think that's, you know, that's the first level of difficulty. One of the things that we're doing at our level is starting to grow our own, which as we see leadership skills, you know, in middle school students and high school students and having an academy program and career and technical education pathways where, you know, those kids that have the skills, we start talking to them about coming back and being teachers, you know, when they're in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade. The pride that we have in our school district. And so I think that's one of the things, you know, that we have to do is start very early in our recruiting efforts, because right now, whether we're talking teachers or administrators, getting people into this field is really, really difficult.
I also think
we need to be looking at, you know, incentives of furthering careers. So do we have programs where we see those young teachers? You know, teachers, they're not paid enough. And so do we have programs that we can offer, you know, those leadership opportunities where we pay for their master's or we partner with colleges, universities, and offer a reduced rate? You know, but what are the incentives that we can offer so that we can help cast that vision? Sometimes I think it's just sitting down, having those conversations, explaining the pathways, because trying to figure that out on your own can be really difficult. And if you're a young teacher, you're responsible for, at the elementary level, 25, 30, 32 students. At the secondary level, 125, 150, 200.
Yep.
One more thing to think about, and already when you're trying to make ends meet at home can be very difficult. So I think, you know, recruiting those people that we see the skills and the opportunities and then the incentives and showing them here's the pathway and here's how I'm going to support you along the way so you're not going to have to do that by yourself.
Right. And if I may, when a young person thinks of education, they think of their teacher. They don't think of the principal, and they don't think of the superintendent or the assistant superintendent or whoever. They think of their teacher, and they have to understand there's a world in education beyond the teacher. And this is this is a way to get into administration, to get into a good, well-paying position in leadership. Mary, what are your thoughts on all this? Okay.
Well,
getting people involved,
absolutely. I totally agree with the. We need to make sure that we're incentivizing, that we're offering those career ladders, that we're being transparent, and that we're being, again, that word aggressively optimistic, if you will, about teaching. And I feel like there's a couple things here. First of all, we have to support our teachers better.
Yeah.
Jessica
yeah.
mentioned wages. Yeah. I think it's more than wages. She's right. But it's about how do we support you in a classroom to do the very complex, challenging work that has to be done, and we have to give you the tools and the skills to do such so that you feel confident when you go in. Because if you have teachers that feel confident and they love what they do, we then say, now we're going to market. And I am an advocate for marketing and branding of your school district because I think we can do a better job. We have to show a return, that ROI for our public, for those public dollars. I think we need to talk to our teachers and say, this is our opportunity to recruit for the future, is how we talk about being a teacher with our children. And that starts in our pre-K all the way to 12. And if I'm advertising every day to my children, love teaching, it's fulfilling, I feel prepared, I feel supported, and I have a future, and this is a great occupation, maybe someday, kid, you could be like me. If we're doing that every day in every classroom in the United States, we won't have a teacher shortage. But we've got some work to do to, first of all, shore up the support for teachers and then start that marketing campaign. Just a couple of thoughts.
Yeah, and it's just so important, all those wonderful things that you're talking about, and I hope we can do it because kids have to see the power of this, and I always make my joke. I'll say it again. At the high school career fair, there's a booth for veterinarians and a booth for firefighters or whatever. There's never an education booth. Okay?
But there should be.
There should be, exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's extremely important. And again, we need females in leadership, and that has to be shown time and time again that this works and works well. I just want to ask both of you in Piper School District, Jess, with all this being said, what are you guys doing over there to get kids involved? And by the way, I want to say something. One of the things I think that schools, that the government or somebody needs to do is to say to people, you become a teacher, you teach for 10 years or whatever, we'll pay off your student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's simple.
Absolutely.
We need an incentive in there. And that's good for everybody. All right? It's that simple. And I don't know why people aren't really doing that. There's got to be a way to make this happen. But anyway, Jess, talk about what you're doing. You do personally, you're a female superintendent in a really nice district. Talk about what you're doing to encourage young ladies and the ladies who are teaching in your schools, et cetera, to look further in their career. Jess.
Well, I think, first of what we talked about is just recruiting and, what Mary talked about, the branding, the marketing, that this is an amazing profession, and we see these leadership skills in you. We actually last summer utilized our students to help us with summer school, and so we want to provide these opportunities. I mean, we have the best on-the-job training opportunities right now with our future educators, and so thinking creatively outside the box, our students received credit for that. And so really, again, in ways that we can incentivize the kids that we have currently in school, I think, is another thing for us to be thinking about. Outside of that, then once we have our amazing educators that we've hired, how do we continue to mold them and incentivize them and give them opportunities to lead? Some of the things that, we have lead teachers that serve on building leadership teams that help the administrators make decisions. And so we're modeling how there's consensus building and how teacher voice is important and listening to teachers. And so, there are those leadership opportunities that we have, again, incentivizing ways that we can partner with universities so that they have reduced tuition, looking at those degrees, feeding into that. We also then they are in those programs, I always say, hey, come back and do your field experience with me. And so really showing them, have them tagging along with me. The reason I'm here is because I had amazing mentors that did the same thing, and I caught the bug. I thought they had the greatest job in the world. And so I will say that, though, and Mary talked about that we are very explicitly every day, even, right now we have the opportunity to say, this is the greatest job in the world. And so come along with me and let me show you how to do that. So I think, it's not just being a teacher and then boom, you're the principal or the superintendent, but rather even teacher leaders play such an important part.
Exactly.
And that is
another
pathway that we can that we can move into those administrative positions.
That's excellent. And by the way, there's another incentive to get your students to come back where you are to do their student teaching or any field work, and that is you get to call your teachers by their first name. That's very important. That's very important.
If student achievement is rising, I'm open. That sounds fine to me.
Right. What about you, Mary? What are you doing over in Washu?
Your
younger teachers, your female teachers into administration, also get the kids back into education. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, congratulations, Piper School District. You got it going on there, girl. So thank you. That's great.
I'm
motivating
and I'm
taking notes of all the things that you're doing. So yay for you.
That's great.
Just a little bit of a different twist on this question. Something we didn't get a chance to talk about is what are some of the barriers that prevent women to move into leadership? And sometimes the research suggests it's other women, right? So how do we then model healthy relationships with other women leaders? So making sure that you're doing that intentionally, that we aren't competing for the two spots on the 10 top table because that's all women get. We are going to encourage each other and we're going to support each other. So I just wanted to call that out real quick. And then the other thing I think we can do as leaders that I'm trying to model is that balance for my female teachers. So I do a message from Mary every Friday, and it's lovely. I'm telling you, it's lovely. Everyone reads it. But anyway, most recently, I said, "Hi, everybody. Here's a picture of me and my daughter, at the pumpkin patch," and she lives out of town. I said, "I had a ton of work to do this weekend, but I said, no, I'm going to be mom because that's much more important." So those little ways of saying there is a way to balance and modeling. So just a couple thoughts there.
That's great. And Larry, would it be okay if I added on to that really quickly?
Sure.
I so agree with what Mary said about those relationships. I think another barrier when I step back and think of it is typically, I think in the past and in a lot of the males that we have in superintendency roles, and again, to Mary's point earlier, that they're fantastic men in those roles, but I think there's been a traditional path to the superintendency itself that a lot of those district office positions are more of the budget manager, you know, financial responsibilities, the technology piece, maintenance and operational piece, which typically have been male-dominated positions as well. And so I think, you know, which I think we're looking at this in education, but a lot of the females that go into curriculum, instruction, professional development, those can be pathways to the superintendency as well.
Absolutely.
So I think that can be another barrier as school districts and board of educations are looking at roles and responsibilities of the superintendency. Remember, our number one mission is that educational piece, the learning, the instruction, the professional development of our teachers. And so considering all of those roles and not just maybe those roles that in the past, especially that finance piece that leads to the superintendency, I think that's an important piece for us to be talking about as well.
Yeah.
It really is. And all these things together, and again, we're talking about a profession that's 80% female, but 25% in top leadership, superintendent.
Yeah.
And we have to make a change on that. That is not right. Okay, there's something wrong with that, and we really have to do it. And you two are perfect examples of why we should do it. Okay, just incredible.
And we're going to do it, Larry. We're going to do it. Yes,
that's right.
Committed.
I know.
Yep.
I know. And I think it's just great. And by the way, you both mentioned about marketing. And I always like to push this because they're friends of mine, is the National School Public Relations Association. Mm-hmm. I work a lot with them, NSPRA. Okay? Mm-hmm. And one of their key things, and I'm saying not just to you two ladies, but to the audience, we need professional communication, both external and internal. Okay,
right.
And if we do that to balance the budget, it makes all the difference. And I'm always in favor of the good work that NSPRA does. Okay, so I'm just saying that, and also the good work AASA does. And look at the way we were able to get this show together thanks to them. So I just love working with AASA. They really do well. Okay, and what more can I say? Mary, go back to sleep or whatever. Okay.
Oh no, that ship has sailed. I'm now up and running, and I'm going to get my third cup of coffee, and that's how it's going to happen. So there.
Okay, because the superintendent's today, everybody, and Washuga will end at 2 p.m. when she falls asleep at her desk. Okay. So thank you for getting up so early. Yeah, really.
Perfect.
Thank you very much for being there. You were great, and Jessica, thank you. And forget your forget any heart problems or artery problems, and go to Stroud's and have chicken fried steak and think of me.
Done.
Okay?
I will do that today. And if you're ever in Kansas City, you give me a call and I'll take you there.
Jess, I will take you up on that. I guarantee it. Both of you have a great day.
Do.
Yeah, I will. Have a great day and a good year. And let's keep working on this. Okay. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
You're
take
very
care.
Welcome.
Right.
Both. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Two great ladies, everybody. Thank you, AASA, AASA.org, Jimmy over there, for supplying the show with these two incredible spokespeople. All right, and we got to. It's obvious. I'm not going to say it anymore. It's obviously what's going on out there. We need to get more ladies into the superintendent position. All right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org, where everything we do is. Go over there, check it out, read our magazine, look at our newsletter, etc. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.